You're Benny.
Yeah.
You're Benny, you're not Mikey.
Not Mikey.
Call the meeting of the Higher Education Policy and Finance Committee to order. And we have a busy schedule. First order of business, the approval of the minutes from the March 20th meeting. Representative Okubina, was that you?
Yeah.
Okay. The only comment, I guess, we've made the Erdahl House File 2025 is listed as an informational meeting on the minutes, which is what it actually turned out to be. Just wanted to point that out. Any other comments?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Okubina.
Mr. Chair, does somebody then have to make a motion?
We will get to that. Oh, you mean as far as...
On the Erdahl motion.
We will deal with that.
Okay. I'm wondering how you're going
to
handle it.
I just pointed it out for a minute. So other than that, are we ready to vote? All those in favor of the motion to approve the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The minutes are approved. And the first order of business will be dealing with House File 2025. And we had a late referral from the Committee on Ways and Means, so we thought we had it in our possession. It turned out we did not. GovOps, I'm sorry. So we have to reprocess or make a motion again to recommend that House File 2025 pass as amended and then refer it to the Education and Finance Committee. So that's the motion. Representative Rukavina?
Mr. Chair, and we had an extensive hearing on it, a lot of good discussion back and forth, but I'm puzzled as to, you know, how it was missed that the bill hadn't been gone from GovOp to the floor, or whatever paperwork and paper shuffling has to do to get back to here, because, you know, there's been a lot of, it seems, skirting of the rules and changing of the rules on the House floor, and I don't know what's going on in other committees, but, you know, and I appreciate you, Mr. Chair, and your staff giving me and other members a heads up that the bill wasn't actually in our possession, but maybe somebody can explain that, how it was missed that we thought we had this bill and we didn't have it. Mr. Valu, well, do you know?
I think it was had to do with something with the volume of paperwork.
Mr. Chair,
the same.
I used to let Ms. Fine talk, so he can talk. He's a good talker.
Mike's doesn't work.
No.
But he will respond to you.
Mr. Chair and Representative Rukavina, we scheduled this bill last week for a hearing this week. With the understanding that GovOps would take it up on Friday and it would be reported on the floor on Monday. And so we just missed the fact that they didn't get the paperwork done on Monday as we thought they did.
So then, Mr. Chair, was it the GovOps problem or a problem on the floor that didn't get the bill to us? And you don't?
I don't have an answer for that.
Okay.
I don't know.
All righty.
So if we can just move forward.
Mr. Chair, I understand that you wanted to get that over to meet deadline by tomorrow, I assume.
Right.
So I guess my question would be, if we pass it today, does it make the floor today so it can be heard tomorrow? Because tomorrow is the deadline.
I assume that that'll happen.
I hope it does, because the next committee might not have it either by tomorrow.
Okay, we do have the motion that I made. Any further discussion? Okay. We need to amend my amendment to add the A6 amendment, or my motion, rather. Okay. Do they all have that?
Yep.
Okay. It's the A6 amendment. Question, Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you just, when you're finished, just restate your whole motion?
Good idea. We have the A6 amendment. We have to pass. My motion was to repass House File, to pass House File 2025, but we have to add the A6 amendment
as
amended. Yeah.
And Mr. Chair, if I could, for clarification, then is this the amendment that Representative Atkins moved, or is this an amendment to his amendment?
This is the Atkins amendment.
Okay, that's fine. Okay.
Are we ready?
Where's the bill going?
Well let's amend it, and then
education, right? K-12 finance.
You're making a motion to amend the bill right now with A6, right?
Yes, we are.
Yes, okay.
Aye.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Sorry for the confusion.
No.
Negative?
Yeah.
Passed. Okay. Now we have the amendment. We're ready to vote on the whole thing. House File 2025 as amended. All those in favor?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Is
it goes
being
to,
referred
to education finance. Education finance.
Okay.
All right. Now, any other questions? All those in favor say aye.
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 Okay. House File 2025 is on its way. I know. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Now we're going to move on our agenda to House File 2065. That's our omnibus higher education bill. And to begin, I think I'd like to ask Ms. Novak to. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Just before Ms. Novak, I officially need to move House File 2065 and to pass as amended, and we will move that to and refer to Ways and Means. That's where it's going. Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm going to go through the amendment that's labeled the DE1-1 amendment. Section 1 of the amendment is student health care. It's from the Representative Anderson's bill, House File 2322. It has a couple of changes. It requires the institution to consider the fiscal impact of health plans on the student and the student's family when granting a waiver. Section 2 is from House File 2880. It is Representative Masrall's bill that, as it was amended in committee, it updates the definition of student for immunization, for having a statement of immunization. Section 3 is from House File 2213. It's a technical change, a conforming change to the textbook statute. Section 4 is from House File 2846. It's Representative Kahn's bill as amended in the committee. It adds a student to the student. It adds the chair of the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition to the Student Advisory Council, and it says that the membership is not limited to the listed those listed in statute. Section 5 is from House File 2213. It's another part of the Representative Banyan's textbook changes, and these changes apply to Minsky institutions and bookstores. It adds some requirements that for what has to be compiled in the course schedule with the information about course materials that instructors are recommending. Section 6 is another part of the Representative Banyan's House File 2213. It requires both the department and the instructor to provide the information, and it increases the time at which they must provide the information to bookstores to 45 days. And it adds that a requirement that if there is a new textbook edition, they must notify the bookstore, and the course syllabus must reflect those changes between editions of the textbook. It adds some additional information that must be provided to students and bookstores, and adds a definition of custom textbooks. On page 4, section 7 is from House File 1990. It's a technical change that eliminates an archaic date. Section 8 is also from House File 1990. It provides that Minnesota State Colleges and Universities have continuing access to their resources that are in the State Treasury, and provides for some payments to the Department or the Commissioner of Management and Budget. Section 9 is an increase. It's from House File 2065. It's an increase in the amount of aggregate amount of revenue bonds that MNSQ can issue. The amount that's in the amendment is a slight decrease from what was in the bill. It's $405 million instead of $430 million. Section 10 is from House File 2573. It changes individual to person for the College Savings Plan account owner, and it has to do with ensuring that trusts can be a designated account owner. Section 11 is from House File 1137 as amended in committee. This is Representative Rukavina's bill, and it sets aside a certain amount of money from the Permanent University Fund mineral account for educational purposes at Mesabi Range Community and Technical College. Section 12 on page 6 is Representative Mariani's bill, House File 2126. It makes a change to the requirement to be licensed for schools who use the word academy or institute prior to August 1st, 2008, so that they do not have to go through, if they're strictly avocational schools, they don't have to go through the same licensing requirements. Section 13 is from House File 2507. It adds graduate education to the uses of the Safety Officer Survivor Scholarship. Section 14 is also from House File 2507, which is Representative Detner's bill, and it describes how the tuition maximum for graduate study will be calculated. And Section 15 is a replacement section for a similar section that was in Representative Banyan's bill on textbooks. This is the language that passed the Senate, and it changes it from it changes it to a work group rather than a task force. And that's the end of the amendment.
All right, thank you, Ms. Novak. Any questions on the DE1-1? Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, I'm just curious on the and you brought down the amount on the revenue bonds in Section 9. But I'm wondering, is there an agreement with MNSQ? Because my understanding was that the student bodies of the two-year institutions didn't want this to go up, and that the university students kind of did. So is there a limit on how is going to be just, does it say somewhere that it's just going to be to the universities, or is there another category or subdivision that refers to the 2 years?
Representative Rukavina, I think it's just an understanding that that $405 million will just deal with the four-year colleges. That's the extent of the money needed for that. and the 2 years would not be included. So it's more of an understanding than something in writing, as I know.
So, Mr. Chair,
this is what they have told us.
Ms. Novak, maybe you could help me then. Is there like a subdivision 2 not in the bill that is also for like the 2 years, or is this a generic subdivision that deals with all of the institutions at Minskew, and we're just going by word of, by a handshake or something then, that this is not going to, any more revenue bonds aren't going to be imposed on the 2 year Community and Technical College students?
Mr. Chair and Representative Rukavina, there is not a separate subdivision that deals with the 2 year institutions.
And so, Ms. Novak, do you know anything about a handshake? Because, Mr. Chair, my concern is, and Representative, I think Pawlowski dug a little deeper into this than I did. And, you know, you've got a small community college, whether at Granite Falls or Rainy River up in International Falls, and you use this excess money now you're giving them because they're approaching the $300 million limit, and they want to build a dorm or whatever, and you got 250 students in Pine County, a technical college, or 300 at Rainy River, I don't know how many at Granite Falls, that got to pick up, you know, a $3 or $4 million bond. That's a lot of money on top of their tuition increase, and I can't remember what Representative Pawlowski told me. He found out on the way this is appropriated to the campus, but I think I'm correct in saying that these students could take a terrible hit, and if Bemidji's and Mankato's and Moorhead's and Winona's want to do this, that's fine, but I know the two-year student organizations were concerned about it, so I guess maybe I should have Minsky or somebody come down and tell me where the trust is in this application of this.
Somebody could respond to the question?
Oh, Ms. Kane is here. I'm going right to the top. We're at the pay scale now that can determine the answer to this.
Thank you for coming down. So identify yourself, please.
My name is Laura King, and I'm the Vice Chancellor for Finance for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, as has been indicated by Ms. Novak, the provision provides a dollar cap only and is silent on whether it's used for university or college projects. We have not asked, nor have we been asked, to make any representations about what we would do over the next 2 years. What the students have asked for is more time to talk about it, and we're prepared to provide that. So I wouldn't expect anything to happen without the student consultation that has been testified to.
Representative Rukavina?
Well, Mr. Chair, I just hope that those student representatives take into consideration what I just talked about when it comes to, it's one thing to build a, you know, a rec room or rec area or whatever in Normandale where there's 6 or 7, I don't know how many thousand students versus, you know, like what I just brought up, those smaller campuses. So assured that, you know, that it's going to be up to the students and in discussion with the central office, I guess I'm okay with that.
Ms. King?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, you can be assured that the board has the same level of concern about affordability that we've heard here. So be assured.
All right.
I'm done.
Any further discussion on the E1-1 before we move on to some other amendments? All right. Then we will move on to we have the A4 amendment. Oh. Okay. All right, we need to move the DE1-1 amendment.
Number.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Now we have an A4 amendment to the DE1-1.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the A4 amendment, and I'll ask for a roll call.
Representative Pawlowski moves the A4 amendment.
Mr. Chair, this amendment would deal with the section of the bill that deals with shutdown, and it would add the disability community. being protected during a shutdown. I think if we're establishing now priorities as to what is going to be shut down in this state and what is going to be kept open, I am very sympathetic about higher ed, but I am extremely sympathetic about our disability community and the fact that we have people with mental and physical disabilities that would lose services. And if we're going to start a shutdown debate, I would hope that we would at least include them.
Okay. Representative Pawlowski, although many would also be sympathetic with that, I believe that this amendment would be out of order, and that's according to our rules, which says that amendment offered in committee must be on a subject that is within our jurisdiction, and I think that's the technicality. This does not fit our higher ed jurisdiction.
Mr. Chair, I would respectfully disagree. The subject is shutdown. And since we are now opening up higher ed to a discussion of shutdown, then I think this amendment would be appropriate. And any other amendments dealing with shutdown would be too. So, Mr. Chair, I would disagree with the ruling of the chair. Have you made the ruling that this is out of order?
I have made the ruling, yes.
Mr. Chair, then I would like to challenge the ruling of the chair, and I'd ask for a roll call vote.
I'm not sure that that's technically the process for our committee.
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
Mr. Chair, advice to the chair.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I have been in this legislature for 26 years, and I can't ever recall anyone, any chair, ever ruling an amendment in committee out of order. And I never, ever did it when I chaired committees, nor when I've been in the minority sitting in committees has there ever been a ruling that a amendment is not germane to a bill, because that is not the rules of the House. Mr. Chair, this is a pretty dangerous approach to the whole committee process in the Minnesota House of Representatives. I would ask you to really reconsider this, and if it means taking a recess or something to do it, I'm more than willing for you to just sit down and discuss this with somebody, because what you're doing right now is dangerous for the whole institution.
Ms. Novak, would you maybe help clarify this?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't think a nonpartisan staff should have to get involved in this. Representative Pawlowski has offered an amendment to this bill, and I've never had a chair in my entire 26-year memory rule an amendment out of order. But even given that, saying that, his amendment is obviously in order because it deals with the issue of this government shutdown, which is in your bill. And again, I reiterate, if you need to take a recess to talk to your other members in the majority and discuss this, let's go for a recess. But if you make this ruling and don't let us vote, I would suggest to my side of the caucus that we just leave this process right now, because that is totally unfair. And we just walk out of the room then, because we have no voice anymore anywhere. We don't have a voice here in committee. We don't have a voice on the floor anymore. We just don't have a voice. I might as well just go drinking over at the Kelly Inn right now. So, Mr. Chair, I would hope you would reconsider. If you want to take advice from other people, that's up to you, but that's my advice.
Mr. Chair, could you, for the record,
yes,
cite the rule that you're using to say that this amendment is out of order?
Okay. 6.21 is the number.
And, Mr. Chair,
and it's heading committee procedures.
And, Mr. Chair, under 6.21, you're saying that this amendment is out of order in committee, and would you repeat your rationale for it, please?
I'll repeat the wording, and that an amendment offered in committee must be on a subject that is within our jurisdiction, and the disabilities is not.
Mr. Chair, but then shutdown is.
Shutdown probably would apply to all committees.
Well, Mr. Chair, then you've made your ruling, so now I have challenged the ruling of the chair, and I've asked for a vote. Can you cite the rule that says that that is out of order?
I don't have a rule. I think as a chair, though, I would have some power to either... if you want to have a vote, I don't
Mr. Chair, I am simply asked, I'm challenging the ruling of the chair. I'm asking for a roll call vote. You cannot cite a rule that says that that is out of order. Chairs make rulings all the time. We challenge them, and we vote on them. So that has been the custom and usage of this body since it's come into existence. If you want to say that you're not going to do that, then there are other discussions we can have on the rules. Chairs make rulings. There are consequences, yes. And it would be a simple vote. If you can point to the rule, I'd like to see it.
Mr. Chair, is moving for a 10-minute recess a higher ruling? Could I move for a recess? Could I move for a recess of the chair?
We can. We'll put the committee in recess for 5 minutes.
That's good.
We'll reconvene the meeting of the Higher Education Policy and Finance Committee, and after a break and after some consultation, members, I believe the chair will stick by the original ruling. And rule that this amendment, the A4 amendment, is out of order.
Mr. Chair, and then I have asked for a challenge to the ruling of the chair and a roll call vote on the ruling of the chair on that decision.
And I believe that is also out of order, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I would disagree. I have seen rulings of the chair voted on in committee in my entire 26 years in the body. So I disagree that a ruling of the chair cannot be voted on. It can be voted on. A request has been made, and you've decided not to do it. Particularly on an issue like this, it was your decision to open this bill up to the shutdown debate. If we're going to have a debate on shutdown, then I think we should take a hard look at what our priorities are. And if our priorities are only higher education and not people who have disabilities and have no recourse, nowhere to go for assistance, then, Mr. Chair, I think you better be very careful with the next decisions you make about what goes into this bill, too. It's going to Ways and Means. It will be on the floor. But, Mr. Chair, I disagree with your ruling. And as a previous chair, I've had rulings challenged, and we've had votes on them. So, Mr. Chair, I vehemently disagree. It's unfortunate that we're at this situation.
Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Obviously, I appreciate the efforts here, but this is what I would consider theatrics. This is not, I don't think there's any way that anybody would say that this has anything to do with the jurisdiction of this committee. Rule 6.21 in the House rules clearly states that amendment offered in committee must be on a subject that's within the jurisdiction of the committee. Whether an amendment on a subject that is within the jurisdiction of the committee is a question to be decided by the person chairing the meeting, who may put the question to the committee. There's nothing here that says that the chair is doing anything out of the ordinary, and this certainly is not within the jurisdiction of this committee. So I appreciate your ruling, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Representative
Mr. Chair, I am not questioning the fact that you can make the initial ruling and whether or not it's germane. I am questioning the fact that when I challenged the ruling and asked for a vote, you have decided that that is out of order. You have made a decision. I disagree with the decision. I then want the body, which in this case is the committee, to vote on your decision. That is the motion I've made. So the motion is on your decision about the germaneness. It's no longer on the amendment itself. It's on the ruling that the chair has made. That's the request I've made.
Advice to the chair.
Representative Benson, I think, was ahead of you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that Representative Dowd correctly states, they read directly from the rules, you're under no obligation at all to have a vote on your calling that the subject that matter at hand is germane or not. It's not. You do not have to call a vote for that.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, well, Representative Dowd, Representative Benson, again, custom and usage overrules anything. and the rules of the House must be observed in committee is the top rule according to 6.21. And it says right there, the rules of the House must be observed in committee if they are applicable. Custom and usage is applicable, and custom and usage is that we've always allowed amendments, even on germaneness. Now, you can raise that question, that's fine, but let's read on then. And finally, look at what it says there after you, it says, a member of a committee may demand a roll call vote on any bill, resolution, report, motion, or amendment before the committee. If a demand is made, the roll must be called. The name of the member demanding the roll call and the vote of each member must be recorded in the committee minutes. There's been a ruling by the chair. There's been a roll call requested. Clerk will take the roll. But, Mr. Chair, it specifically says right there what the process should be. And Representative Pawlowski's following the process, and we should just then vote on your ruling, and that will be the end of it, and we can move on.
Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have three comments. Number one, as Representative Rukavina says, the custom usage has been to have very wide latitude. I know when we were in a majority and I was on K-12, we saw a lot of amendments, Representative Detmer, that we could discuss whether they were germane or not, but we heard each amendment. Number two, Mr. Chair, I'm not going to ask you at the moment, although I'm going to reserve the right to do so, for have you define the word subject in the paragraph that Representative Dowd read, because I'm not sure if it seems to me that the subject of shutdown is in your bill. And if it's not in the jurisdiction of the committee, then you would have to remove that from the bill. So that's number two. But number three is the most telling, I think, Mr. Chair. Representative Rukavina is right, exactly right. Even if we put the germaneness ruling aside, Representative Pawlowski moved to challenge the ruling of the chair. It is a motion. That motion is legitimate, and you have no discretion. If a demand is made, the roll must be called. Mr. Chair, I'll wait till you're done. I was just allowing you to finish your conversation. So, Mr. Chair, I don't think you have discretion at this point. I will yield for a moment to Representative Dowd. Maybe he has some clarifying language on this, but I would like you to then come back to me if you're not going to call the roll call, because then I have another question for you.
Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That rule, 6.21, just really very clearly states that it's up to the person chairing the meeting to make the ultimate ruling. You've made that ruling. They're requesting to overrule that ruling. There's nothing in the rules that even says that's in order. As far as I'm concerned, you've ruled that out of order. As far as the subject, I appreciate the efforts here again, but this is just like saying that, well, this deals with the Minnesota statutes, so because the rest of the bill deals with the Minnesota statutes, that we should, for some reason, rule that this is germane. Just because you mentioned shutdown, the other shutdown mentions have to do with higher education. This one does not. This obviously is the Higher Education Committee, not the shutdown committee. So I think we can all see that this obviously is not germane to this committee. So I would ask, Mr. Chairman, that you stick with your rulings and let's get on to the business of this committee.
Representative Morrow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dowd, I am at least tentatively willing to concede the first part about germaneness, but there's no discretion on the motion to challenge it. And the custom and usage of this House, and we've just had it on the floor this week, was when the Speaker makes a ruling on germaneness, we can appeal the ruling of the chair. That is the custom and usage of this House. We do it all the time. What we're doing is doing the very same thing in committee. So, Representative Dowd, I'm not arguing the germaneness. I'm saying the chair has no choice but to call the roll. But just like the Speaker has no choice on the House floor when someone appeals the ruling of the Speaker, Speaker Zellers can't choose when to do the roll and when he doesn't. He always has to do the roll, just as Speaker Kelleher did, just as Speaker Swigum did, just as Speaker Long did. We could keep going back and read the list. Mr. Chair, I don't think you have a choice but to call the roll on the motion to challenge your ruling.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On two points. First, germaneness, I quote Speaker Zellers, there is no germaneness rule in committee. That's not me saying that. That's Speaker Zellers. I can't make it up. I mean, you know, if you want to take another couple-minute recess and go call on him, there is no germaneness rule in committee. That's your speaker. That's on germaneness. Then the second point I would make is simply to echo the highest rule that we have in this body is the custom and usage of the body. When there's a ruling of the chair, there can be an exception taken and a ruling asked to be had on the ruling of the chair. We do it all the time. I've been stunned very seldom in this body. I usually know what to expect, Chair Nornes, but this one would stun me. If you won't at least allow, and I went to talk for a couple minutes to some gentlemen here, but I'm getting the sense that you're looking at just ruling and not having the ability to have a vote on the ruling of the chair. And if that's in fact what you're talking about, we've never had that before, ever. I'd go along with Representative Rukavina. If that's how you want to run the committee, then you all may as well just take it all over to yourselves. We'll go and visit with constituents or go knock on doors because you've just taken over the entire process and taken out the minority's voice altogether. So I can't imagine that you would prohibit a vote on the ruling of the chair. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Any other discussion? Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, if this is what's going to happen and we proceed after this, and there is a voice vote, and division is called, then are you arbitrarily going to say that your decision stands because it's your decision, and there will not be any consequences to that? Because what you're doing now is literally saying it's you make the final decision no matter what. Even if a member challenges it, you are not going to allow that challenge to stand. Is that how we're going to do this, Mr. Chair?
We need to stick to this specific issue, you know.
Mr. Chair, I am. The issue before the body now is your ruling. On a voice vote, it is your ruling of what you heard. The challenge would be made to that. So I am sticking to the issue, Mr. Chair. Is your ruling the final say in every situation? So if it's a voice vote, you make a ruling, division is called, you can simply say, no, I'm sorry, I heard it that way, and that's it.
I think in most cases, if there's an amendment or a procedure or a motion that's germane to this committee, obviously not. But according to the rules, I can determine whether what is being offered is germane to this committee. And that's what the original ruling was. The amendment that was offered, in my opinion, I have ruled that it is not germane. And that's really
Mr. Chair, you are fully capable of doing that. But the motion before us now is that ruling. So, and I have requested that it be challenged.
Representative Dell.
You know, obviously, there's some disagreement here on the procedure, but the rule under 6.21 is very clear. Can my colleagues on the other side of the aisle cite a different rule that contradicts that allows for some overruling of the chair? I mean, this rule is very clear. If a demand is, whether an amendment is on a subject that is within the jurisdiction of the committee is a question to be decided by the person chairing the meeting, who may put the question to the committee. It doesn't give any other, I mean, the chair ultimately has the ability to rule on that, and he's ruling because you haven't been able to cite any rule that would allow for, I know you're citing custom and usage, but you're citing custom and usage for the chamber, not for committees. And this is a rule that deals with committees, and I know that there are different rules, as we all do, that govern the way we operate the committees and the way we operate the House when it's in session. So I can't find another rule that overrides this one, but this one is very, very clear. It gives the authority to the chair to rule on germaneness. And this, I mean, beyond that, I noticed how we've gotten into arguing about the rules. Nobody now is saying that this is germane, because it very certainly is not. Anybody can read that. This is the Higher Education Committee. Mr. Chairman, short of you know, some other rule that, you know, this very clearly deals with the committee rules and gives you the ability to rule on this, which you have done. I would appreciate that you stand by that and we continue to move on with the business of this committee. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morrow was first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Dowd, page 28, the next paragraph. We aren't arguing the germaneness because the chair has ruled on the germaneness. We are not saying that he can't make a ruling. In fact, Representative Pulaski said he recognizes the chair can make a ruling. It's the next paragraph. A member of a committee may demand a roll call vote on any bill, resolution, report, motion, or amendment before the committee. Representative Pulaski has moved to challenge the ruling of the chair. If a demand is made, the roll must be called.
Aye. Representative Dowd, do you have a response?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Morrow. What I was asking was, can you cite a rule that gives you the authority in committee to that a motion to overrule the chair is even in order? He has ruled that out of order. And I can't find a rule, and I've scoured these now, and I appreciate you for providing them to me because I didn't have my copy with me. But I can't find a rule that says in committee that you can that a motion to overrule the chair is even in order, and he has ruled it out of order. So I think at this point it's time to move on.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Vogel,
Mr. Rukavina was first.
Representative Rukavina.
Chair, Representative Dowd, you are in your first term. I'm in my 13th. Given the fact that I've never seen this happen before, you are correct that the chair has ruled that this amendment is not germane. Correct. You are correct that he has the right to rule it not germane and that correct. He may put the question to the committee. But you're asking for it to cite where it goes on, and 6.21 goes on to say a member of a committee may demand a roll call vote on any bill, resolution, report, or motion. I don't know what the chair's ruling is,
well,
but it's certainly a motion of sorts that it's mm-hmm. not germane, and
no, it's not.
We have the right to ask for a roll call. And even given that, Representative Pulaski's words should be considered by everybody at this table, because if a chair can just decide on anything, and we can't appeal it or do anything, Representative Pulaski's right. The next time there's a vote here and we ask for a division and eight hands go up in favor and five hands go up against, the chair can just say, my eyes aren't working, and it's done. I made a decision. That's what you're telling us, that black is white and blue is green, and however you want to interpret it. You have just completely, I don't know how.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Vogel.
You know, in reading that, I do not see ruling in that list that can be appealed and called for a roll call. It says a resolution, report, motion, or amendment. This is a ruling. It's not a motion. It's not an amendment. It's not a resolution. It's a report. It is a ruling.
Mr. Chair,
sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and maybe I wasn't being clear enough earlier. It's my understanding that the motion to overrule the chair is not before this committee because the chair has ruled it out of order, and I can't find anything in the rules, and I'm challenging you and asking you that if you can see it in the rules, please bring that forward. But I see nothing in the rules that makes that motion in order in this committee, and the chair has ruled it out of order. So I don't know if you're now challenging that ruling and that you'd want to have a motion or a roll call on that, but you haven't challenged his overruling of that motion. The motion's not before us.
We can't challenge anything. We've just been told we can't do anything.
Members.
It's because this is not germane.
No, Mr. Chair.
And the rules are very clear on that.
I will move to appeal the ruling of the chair, and I call for a roll call. I made a motion.
That is a motion.
That's advice, a motion. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Advice on your prior to your ruling on the motion that now is before the body, I would advise that you stay consistent with your prior ruling and rule this one out of order as well.
Well, members, we have spent a lot of time on this, and I understand the passion. I didn't realize what this would stir up. We have a lot of work we need to get done. I try to be fair, but again, I need to rule that motion out of order so we can move on with our agenda.
I'll appeal that ruling, Mr. Chair, as for the roll be called. You want to do this all day? You like playing games like this?
Representative Atkins.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
This is not a game. We're trying to get some work done.
Sure seems.
And
like
if you wanted the vote, we could vote, and you can count heads. You know how the vote would go. No, Representative Dowd.
Mr. Chairman, again, and I appreciate my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, and I know that you know me to be a reasonable person. But this is a game, and you know this motion or amendment, excuse me. Does not serve a purpose in this committee other than, you know, what we're here to do, and I've said this in other committees. I came here and I was elected to do policy. I wasn't elected to come here and sit at these committee hearings and to speak on the House floor for politics. And that's what this is about. At least that's the only thing that I can imagine that this is about, so that you can send out some mailers and elections this fall. I didn't come here for that. The chair has very appropriately ruled that this is not under the germaneness of this committee, which everybody can see. And, Mr. Chairman, if we're going to continue to have motions be made that you've already ruled out of order, I would just suggest that you don't recognize those motions and we move on with the order of business of this committee.
Members, I'd like to offer the A5 amendment, have the author offer that.
Mr. Chair, just one question before we go to the A5. Will the minutes reflect the motions that have been made today and the decisions of the chair?
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Morrow.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dowd, I won't get into what you were just saying about personal motives and the like. Representative Dowd, I think from the Constitution to the present day, one of the reasons that our system of law works is because you protect the rights of the minority. You make sure the process is fair. And the ability to challenge a ruling by the majority is one of the essential rights of a minority. It was an essential right that was practiced when we were in the majority and your side was in the minority in my first 4 years here. The ability to express and challenge a ruling is essential to democracy. We have to protect minority rights. So this is not a game to me at this point. This is an essential question. I don't know now whether I can appeal any ruling by the chair on anything in this committee. Because it seems now, in your view, to be up to the discretion of the chair when the minority can challenge a ruling, can appeal a ruling, can make any motion. This is I'm not playing politics here. If I'm playing anything, I'm playing democracy, and I'm telling you, this is a very, very bad precedent to set.
Representative Pawlowski, would you like to move your amendment?
Mr. Chair, I move the A5 amendment. I'm going to request a roll call vote. The A5 amendment would prevent the students who are in teacher preparation programs from paying a $300 fee on a teacher performance assessment that does not go to their licensure, but apparently is an evaluation of the program that they're in. And Mr. Chair, I would request that we have a Professor Hornstein from St. Cloud State who wishes to testify briefly to this. Sure. And there may be others when he's finished, but that's the amendment.
He is welcome to come on down. Professor Hornstein, is that correct?
Yes.
Have a seat and officially introduce yourself and then proceed.
Thank you. My name is Steve Hornstein.
Can you pull the microphone towards you?
I'm sorry. Is that better?
That's better.
My name is Steve Hornstein. I am professor of education at St. Cloud State University. I am specifically concerned with the Board of Teaching's plan for charging students up to $300 for this teacher performance assessment. Whereas I believe that most education faculty do support a move towards performance-based assessments such as the TPA, I think the board has created an unfunded mandate in adopting this assessment at this time, and I have to assume they've done it this way because they well know that the teacher education institutions themselves cannot afford to pay for this. Were this assessment to be charged to St. Cloud State, it would cost us up to $75,000 a semester simply to pay for this assessment. If that kind of funding were available at St. Cloud State, I would certainly hope that it would be used to hire faculty to replace the faculty that we've lost in the last couple of years and to enable us to form better relationships with the other K-12 institutions that we work with. The Board of Teaching maintains that the TPA is simply a program requirement, but it's different from imposing specific standards or the length of student teaching or tests that students must take specifically to earn their licenses. I've been working in Minnesota for 26 years now, and they've never imposed a measure in the past that goes to a specific course. This will be specifically in student teaching. And that students are required to pay for specifically. And in this case, the students individually would be required to pay the $300 for this assessment. The other tests that our candidates take are used to determine their individual qualifications for teaching. This is not currently the case with the board of with the TPA, and the board does not even currently require data about individual students, even though the individual students would be paying for this assessment. So the board currently only requires aggregated data by institution. As such, the students will receive no tangible or material benefit from taking this assessment. They could get material and tangible benefit by working with their cooperating teachers and doing a different kind of assessment. This one, which is done electronically and sent to Pearson, and they receive no specific and in-depth feedback on it. They receive absolutely nothing from participating in this. Student teaching is an extremely stressful time for teacher candidates, both financially and in the amount of work that they do for school. Typically, we ask students not to work during student teaching or to work as little as possible to allow them to focus totally on their student teaching. And obviously, this creates a financial crisis or financial strain for them to begin with. They're also required to pay for a criminal background check for student teaching, for liability insurance, for the cost of transportation to their placement site, and up to $200 for the current licensure tests that they take during their final semester. At my own institution, student fees in the hundreds of dollars are being considered to pay for the electronic portal and the cameras and infrastructure required to complete the TPA. This chart, and I'll pass it around for you, lists the fees that students currently pay during their education program. So I will, thank you, I'll keep one. You can see, as you can see, students take on a great deal of expense during their programs. On my own campus, adding a fee of $300 to the student teaching semester would be the equivalent of increasing tuition by 7.9%, and that's at a time that the students can least afford it. To add insult to injury, this fee was only announced this last fall, and as such, students came into the program not knowing about the fee and having had no time to plan for the additional expense. I do believe that other options for this initiative are possible and should be investigated. For example, a legislative appropriation could be sought to fund the TPA. Alternatively, the TPA could be used as a tool for licensure, thereby providing a specific benefit to students and encouraging them to do benefit better on the assessment. The TPA could also then be used to replace some of the tests that students currently take, and that would mitigate some of the cost to students. Finally, the Board of Teaching could mandate instead that institutions develop a board-approved performance assessment that would not require a $300 fee paid to Pearson. As such, given the current amendment before you, I ask that the Board of Teaching be prevented from mandating a program assessment for which students or the Minsky institutions are required to pay so that they can then pursue other appropriate revenue streams for this initiative. Thank you for your time.
Any questions? Thank you very much for your
testimony.
Thank
you very much.
Yep. Karen Palmer, I understand, would like to add something. Comments? Welcome, Ms. Palmer, and identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Karen Ballmer. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Board of Teaching. You've heard about the Board of Teaching just a little bit from Professor Hornstein's and Representative Pawlowski's earlier comments. I imagine you probably have questions about the teacher performance assessment. I think what I hope to do and share with you today, and as well as be open and responsive to the questions that you likely have, are just to concur with the sense that there have been concerns about the cost to candidates. That does not fall as news to the Board of Teaching. I've got members that too are concerned, and some of the things, in fact, that Professor Hornstein shared with you are, in fact, things that we are actively have under consideration. For example, one of the things that he shared with you was the possibility of replacing, instead of just layering new costs to candidates on, that we might, as a matter of fact, pull out some requirements. And there are a couple of what I would call low-hanging fruit in state law. We are required to have pedagogy testing. That is a real cost to candidates, both for registering and taking the test, as well as time to study to get to the test site to take it. I would argue that the teacher performance assessment that is being debated here today is an exceedingly better assessment and measure of a candidate's readiness to teach. It does happen in a real classroom with real kids during their student teaching experience. It's not new in the sense of requiring candidates to do new things. They're already planning units of study and planning for the assessment of their learners and their student teaching and so forth. But it does measure it in different ways. And so at that, I would be happy to share more with you about the teacher performance assessment as well as the Board of Teaching's role with it, but I'll stand for questions if that's okay.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Ballmer. Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Ballmer, thank you, and thank you for the phone call earlier today. So if this amendment were adopted, it would then help the Board of Teaching remove some less than desirable fees and replace it with this fee, which you consider to be more desirable. Is that what you just testified to?
Ms. Ballmer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, it would take specific legislative action to do what I just suggested. The pedagogy testing requirement is in state law. Now, we have been, as I said, that has been under discussion. We do think that that is a direction we would like to go in the future that would not erase the cost, but that would help with the cost.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pawlowski.
Ms. Palmer, I'm looking at a list of what students and teacher prep programs pay, and granted, it varies from university to university, but it's at least $1,000, give or take, if you add this $300 fee in on top of record tuition increases, on top of record cuts to higher ed. So, again, if this amendment were adopted, we might actually get the Board of Teaching to come next session and say we can remove some mandates that have outlived their usefulness and replace it with something that you think is much more useful.
Ms. Ballmer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, that is something we are considering. What I would say about this amendment before you today, the question that remains for me and the board is what you heard Professor Hornstein speak to, in the sense that if we were to not allow the candidates to be assessed a fee by way of this amendment, what does that mean for this next school year? We are also heading into a next cycle of program approval. The TPA is central to that. If we don't have the TPA as part of that mix, we have to find an alternative. So it's sort of, there are lots of moving parts in this. I want to be transparent in the sense that we are interested in what I've shared with you today. It would take legislative action. But if this were enacted today or this session, it leaves a hole in terms of what we need to move forward on for program approval.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Palmer, did it take legislative action for the creation of the TPA, or did you do this by rule?
Ms. Palmer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, what we have set forth in statute in 122A09 subdivision 4C is that we do set forth rules that provide for program approval. So we do have a series of rules and standards in place. The TPA is aligned with those standards. What we have done in a reform and redesign initiative of the last 3-4 years with higher ed at the table is to pull out the pieces that they found to be highly inefficient, just paper pushing, of little or no analytic value back to them. We pulled those pieces out, put the TPA in its place by way of the current standards that we have already on the books.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Palmer, Ms. Palmer, I'm going to go back down the same road. You did this by rule. The less than desirable tests are in statute. If you pulled back your rule and then came before the legislature next session and said, take the less desirable tests that no longer are productive off because we're replacing it with this, it doesn't seem that the onus is on us as much as it's on you to perhaps redefine how you're going to do rulemaking and what the consequences are when you create a test that has a $300 fee.
Ms. Ballmer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, my question would be Professor Hornstein's testimony that they don't have the funds to do that. It's an honest question I bring before this committee. If this language were to be passed and the students were prohibited or precluded from having to pay that fee, even if we were able to get rid of some other cost, what my question is, whether we would be able to still have the TPA in the mix as part of where it sits right now. We need to have all institutions.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Palmer, I don't think you understand. The simple solution to this is to have the Board of Teaching back off the rule, reassess what it's already doing, and then when it wants to put this rule into effect, it may indeed have the fee mix available without having to add another $300 to it. I see this as a creation of the Board of Teaching that you can do or not do. You're telling me that the other fees that are listed here are legislatively mandated. So if you back down, wait a year, come back, you can take off some of these less than desirable tests and say that this one is the one you really want, and we won't have $1,000 in fees on the students. We'll have something that's less.
Ms. Ballmer, do you have a response?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, I don't have a copy of that. I don't doubt that there's a hefty price tag associated with that. Not all of those are, I would say, direct costs that the Board of Teaching has. The background checks, for example, those are locally determined. They may be required by the school partners. That may be. My question is whether, if this were to be enacted, how do we know that at some point, even if we are able to pull back on other costs, as we hope to do, is there going to be are our institutions and higher ed colleagues going to have the resources to do that even at a lesser price tag?
Chair, the point is that you can back off, and if you did back off, you could then reassess what you're doing and for a lesser cost and remove some things that frankly you admit aren't that beneficial anymore. You could then come before the legislature next year and we would have a reduction in fee or at least a stability in fee rather than having a $300 increase on top of what you admit are some things that may be less than desirable that we're mandating the students take.
Ms. Ballmer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, yes, I've heard my board chair say it, that we are interested in moving that direction. We're in a field trial right now with the TPA, which is why we didn't come before you this session, asking for a change in the statute specific to the pedagogy test that I mentioned. We presume that all will go well. We'll be operational and live with the TPA next year, and that would be the time when we could come back. So I do think, regardless of what happens today, we will this will continue into next session. There was a colleague has reminded me that we do have language right now that does require a performance-based assessment. That was part of the alternative routes legislation passed last year, and so we are moving towards that mandate through the TPA.
So, Mr. Chair, the amendment, apparently the only harm the amendment would do would be to save the students right now $300 and would have the Board of Teaching actually reassess in totality what it does before it adds yet another test and another fee on the students.
Ms. Palmer, is that $300? Is that a firm number? Is there any way to negotiate something less?
Mr. Chair, it is the best estimate right now in the field trial of what that final cost will be. There, we have we are negotiating that price tag and believe that there will be some discount on it. I cannot tell you with certainty what that will be, but that is another strategy, that another avenue that we've been moving down, as in addition to looking at existing requirements.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Norton and I are authors of a bill called Teacher Performance Assessment. And I think I know, Representative Demmer, you're on the K-12 committee, and we've had many conversations about this. I met with about 25 Gustavus Adolphus College Education students 2.5 weeks ago. This was the reason they wanted to meet. If members, I want to walk you through this, and Representative Norton, Representative Detmer, if you would assist me if I don't get this right, but here's the way the college students told me about it. They said, Terry, we got to take the metal test. That's the first box, the basic skills. There's 125. And members, this legislature has to deal with what's going on that reading, writing, and math test. Because I'll tell you, at least my students at Gustavus are very troubled by what's going on in that test. But let's leave that aside for a moment. Then we talked about if you go down to the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the sixth box, the pedagogy and content tests, and you'll see that's $190. Now, the TPA is supposed to test a student's ability to effectively teach in a classroom. I think it's a great assessment, personally. I agree with Representative Pulaski. Why are we doing the pedagogy test, the middle pedagogy and content test, and then doing the TPA as well? And then what this does, if the $300 is to assess how well the department, Gustavus's education department, for example, is doing in preparing teachers. The evaluation is for the benefit or for the purpose of understanding how we're doing in preparing teachers. We're asking the students to bear the $300 cost to determine how the program is doing in preparing teachers. And nobody around this table made that decision. So what we heard was, and Ms. Baum, you know I agree with TPA, but you said it might be changed. You said you believe there might be some discount. Members, I would say, as Representative Pulaski would say, if you want to charge $300 for the TPA, come back with a complete package in which we understand all the testing that goes into preparing to be a teacher, and maybe we take away the 190, maybe the 300 becomes reasonable, maybe we find out whether there's going to be a discount or not. But as the law, as the rule, not law, stands right now, we're asking students to pay the cost, Representative Banyan, to assess your education department, to assess my college's education department. I'm sorry, Representative Betts, I don't know if you have an education department. Yes, we're asking your students to pay the cost to find out how well you're doing. Well, that's what we're doing. Generally, we're asking students to pay the cost to evaluate a program.
Any further discussion?
No.
Oh, Representative Benz, you okay? Okay, okay. Representative Pulaski then renews his motion for the A5 amendment, and the clerk will be taking the roll.
Nornes?
Yes.
Detmer?
Yes.
Rukavina?
Okay.
Atkins?
Yes.
Banyan?
Yes.
Benson?
Yes.
Doubt?
Yes.
Debke?
Yes.
Hancock?
Yes.
Masrall? Morrow?
Yes.
Norton?
Yes.
Pulaski?
Yes.
Poppy?
Yes.
Vogel?
Ayes, no nays, and the amendment is adopted. Next, we have the A6 amendment. That's Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's my amendment. I so move that amendment. And this is dealing with the University of Minnesota and the Regents. I've actually had this bill drafted and requested a hearing last year, and this year I haven't gotten a hearing. So I'm bringing it before the committee so that we can have a little bit of a discussion. This is pertaining to the Board of Regents, and the first subdivision 5 there on 1.6 to 1.8 talks about that the Board of Regents must not enter into an employment contract or provide payment
to an individual who's a member of the Board of Regents. The second section 12 discusses selection criteria and that must be a part of the selection criteria when they're considering who is going to be a member of the Board of Regents regarding excluding current employees. And then section 16 is, as we're not able to write the Board of Regents code, that this is a request to them that they amend the policy that includes also partisan political interests and putting that aside and including that as part of the what might be a parochial interest. So I'd request approval of the of this amendment and ask for a roll call.
Discussion from members? Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a co-author on that bill and have been very concerned, as I shared recently at a hearing here, about some of the things that are going on with very disappointed in what happened with the regent selection and the light it shed on the university, not in a positive way, as we hope. And there have been a few other things as well. And so while I'm supportive of this amendment, I don't think it goes far enough, frankly, and we just didn't delve into this enough this year. And I'm just going to kind of ask this committee at this moment to put on its list for next year of things we should be dealing with and looking broader into this whole issue of how the regents are selected and what we could do to improve the process in an even more comprehensive way. So I think this is a step in the right direction. I think we should approve this and then really put on the agenda next year a more serious discussion and a more thoughtful approach. And I'll be doing some research in the interim and hope some of the rest of you will too and bring those ideas forward.
And a roll call has been requested. Take the roll.
Nornes?
No.
Detmer?
No.
Rukavina?
Yes.
Atkins?
Yes.
Banyan? Benson?
No.
Doubt?
No.
Bepke?
No.
Hancock?
No.
Mazarell? Morrow?
Yeah, aye.
Norton?
Yes.
Kalowski?
Yes.
Hoppe?
Yes.
Vogel?
No.
Okay.
Seven to six. No.
Okay. By a vote of seven nays, or is that right?
Seven
okay.
Noes.
Seven noes and
six yeses.
Six yeses. That amendment fails. The A9 amendment. Representative Deputy.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Before we go on, I just need to say I'm really disappointed in what just happened. Because while the situation that occurred most recently had to do with a former representative from our body, and that was really unfortunate, it can happen again on the other side. We do not want people serving on the Board of Regents that are employees of the University of Minnesota. And this amendment tried taking care of that. And I'm concerned that we couldn't put the one incident that was partisan aside and do what's right moving ahead. So I wanted to share with my colleagues on the other side of the aisle that I no one said anything. I assumed that meant you were going to concur and that we were going to end these kind of accidents from happening. So I'm just really disappointed.
Thank you, Representative Norton. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, it was, I believe, I can only speak for myself, but having, talked to my other comrades, is that I thought they did a really good job of handling the situation. And I don't think the legislature needs to intervene when I think we just saw the I wouldn't disagree, that with the outcome or anything. I'm just saying I believe that the board did the right thing. And they handled the situation. I didn't think it would really needed our intervention in order to improve the situation. So,
Mr. Chair?
Representative Norton.
And I agree. It took too long, but it was handled. It was handled in a manner. Unfortunately, as I understand it, the regents don't have a process for removing someone if something happens inappropriately. This way, this sets something up in advance so we don't have someone elected accidentally that has a conflict of interest. This just said for the regents to please put something in place so that it doesn't happen again, so that the process keeps it from happening again. So we don't need to debate this any further. I guess I'm frustrated because that debate should have happened before the vote so that I understood, and I feel like I'm having a debate after the vote because I'm shocked at what just happened. So maybe we can just put it on this agenda for next year and have this debate again.
Representative Dell, did you have a comment?
No, I think I'll pass. Thank you.
Okay. I think you might all plan to have get together after session at the speed at which we're moving. Just a heads up. Representative Depke, the A9 amendment, you'd like to offer that? Yeah. Representative Depke?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an amendment regarding the University of Minnesota appropriation transfer to Hennepin County Medical Center. The university has an agreement with the Hennepin County Medical Center for the medical center to provide medical training for doctors candidates at the University of Minnesota. They do have an agreement for 2 years, and the cost is about $645,000 a year in 2012 and another $645,000 in 2013. There was some question whether the university was making a timely payment on that. I have been in conversation with the university as well as the Hennepin County Medical Center. The university has agreed to pay this amount, but I do think that it would behoove us for the next 2 years to make sure that they do. And I don't think that this is something that hopefully in the future that we need to be involved in, but this is a one-time assurance that the university will in fact pay Hennepin County for the services that have been agreed to. And I would recommend a positive vote on this. I'd appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Any discussion on the A9? Representative Rukavina?
Mr. Chair and Representative Depke, they came and talked to me about this too, someone from Hennepin County, and my understanding was the payments fluctuate. So you reached an agreement with the university that they would pay the, because I think I saw some numbers at 400 and some thousand and that, and so the university has agreed to the 645 and the must transfer language in here?
Those were the figures that I gave them. I did receive calls from the President Kaler's office as well as the Director of Government Affairs for the university.
And they're okay with these numbers?
That's what they told me on the phone, yes. And okay. I do have people from Hennepin County Medical Center if you would like to have them come up and just to talk to you about it.
Representative Norton. Are you done?
No, I'm fine with
okay.
it.
Okay, Representative Norton.
So I'm just to be clear, so they've already agreed to do this, but
yes.
We're going to put it in law?
Yes.
Which is the irony of that. When the last motion is that's exactly my argument. Even though mm-hmm. someone agrees to do something, mm-hmm. sometimes it's a good idea to put things in law.
Amend it on.
Representative Deputy.
I have been properly chastised on that issue.
Well, Mr. Chair, to that point, Mr. Chair, to that point, would Representative Deputy take it as a friendly amendment to put the last amendment on as a friendly amendment to her amendment?
No, I will not.
Oh, shucks.
You're trying to be friendly.
And Representative, well, I'm not going to go ahead. We're on to this one now. We can talk later.
any further discussion on the A9 amendment?
No, there's no further on my part, but I do have people if anyone wants to.
I don't think we need any testimony at this time.
No.
Okay. All right. Then we're ready to vote on the A9 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Adopted. Representative Banyan, the A-10 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the A-10 amendment to House File 2065. We've had good discussion about textbooks with publishers, bookstores, students, universities, pretty much around the lot. I will give a thanks, although he's visiting with a student right now with Representative Morrow. That's okay. You can keep talking to him if you want. Who's been who's been very helpful, I think, in helping me work through this. I think this is a good amendment. I understand Representative Morrow has a student with him, and Mr. Chair, I don't know if you have time for his student intern to speak for a couple minutes or not, but I'd be happy if he could have that opportunity.
We can take a few minutes, sir, if that's...
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Since he's taken the time to be here, we'll try to accommodate.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Morrow. Thank you, members. I'll turn to Jacob Lawrence in a moment. Thank you, Representative Banyan. We're going to have a very short oral amendment that I'll let Jacob explain why, for students, the legislation of the type that Representative Banyan and I are working on textbook prices is critically important to students. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would turn to Mr. Lawrence.
Welcome to the committee, and please tell us your name and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Jacob Lawrence. I'm a current junior at Gustavus Adolphus College, and I'm also interning for Representative Morrow. As most people realize in this room, college is expensive. Many college students are looking for ways to save money, and the easiest way that I have found to save money is on textbooks. Students are doing many different things to save money concerning textbooks. They're buying textbooks online, buying electronic versions of textbooks, sharing textbooks, and even avoiding buying textbooks. But there's one more way that you can save money that a lot of students aren't aware of: buying previous editions of textbooks. Today I'm going to talk to you about two things: my process for deciding which textbooks I can skimp on, and why this amendment is important. My process is, first, I decide what kind of class it's going to be. Is it going to be a reading-based class where page numbers and wording are important, like English, theology, or philosophy? Or is it a concept-based class, like macro, micro, Spanish, calculus, where overarching concepts are important? Then I look up the summary of revisions online, and then I decide if the revisions are substantial enough to justify the price difference between the old edition and the new edition. It's important to remember that I do not buy all old edition textbooks. When the revisions are substantial, then I buy the new textbook. I save about $300 a semester, which is about $2,400 per degree. This amendment is important because it requires publishers to make the information available to students, not only to professors. Even though some of the stuff is online, some of the revisions, not all, such as Spanish, calculus, and others. And finally, it bridges the link between publishers, professors, and students. It's important that students have this information. In conclusion, buying the old version of the textbook is not the be-all and end-all of saving money on textbooks. Students need to consider the structure of the class, look up the summary revisions, and finally make an educated decision. Ultimately, it is the students' responsibility to make this decision, and the publishers, bookstores, and colleges' responsibility to give students all the information they require to make an informed decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Jake. And your experience intern?
Intern, yeah.
That's going good?
Oh, yeah, very well.
Okay. That's good. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for getting that on the record. Mr. Chair, I'm going to move an oral amendment now to the DE1 amendment at line 3.18. I think that's probably the easiest way to do it. Mr. Chair, after the word bookstore on 3.18, I move to include and students.
With disabilities.
So, Mr. Chair and members, what it would read is: an instructor or department requiring a new textbook edition must notify the bookstore and students if a previous edition is available. And what Mr. Lawrence has been doing is going on Amazon.com and others and looking for previous editions of books. We, in 2007, I believe, Mr. Chair and members, passed a textbook pricing bill, but the information on editions is only required to go to instructors and institutions. It's not required by law to go to students. So what Mr. Lawrence is proposing here, Representative Banyan and others, is to simply say the information that goes to the bookstore goes to the students as well.
Representative Banyan, have a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Morrow, thank you. I your heart's in the right place. I think the idea is a good one. I'm nervous about how in practice this could happen. I'm trying to figure out what would be required of a faculty member, and since we're both ones, we probably are pretty well positioned to think about this. Mm-hmm. What would be required to if you put this amendment into the law?
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Bannion. I know at least in my institution, when we adopt each and every book, we have to put required, mm-hmm. and there's a column, and we could just put one more column. Is the previous edition, what's the word here? Acceptable. I'm just using your language. It's just saying yeah. You could have one more thing. In your bookstore, my bookstore, we could where they put the author, the price, the ISBN, and everything else, they simply could have a line, previous edition is acceptable. They could put it in the course syllabus. I don't want to be prescriptive in saying how the students get the information. Your department can handle it differently than mine.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Representative Morrow, I guess my question then is, what additional action would a faculty member have to take if we add this on?
Representative Morrow.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bannion, I'm trying not to be prescriptive. I'm offering alternatives. One, it could be just check a box when you order your textbook saying the previous edition is acceptable. Or a professor could put it on the syllabus. Or a department could choose to say on the department website. There are many ways. It could be in the registration materials. I don't know how they do things that represent Benson's campus or my campus. I know how they do it on my campus. I don't want to be prescriptive. I'm just saying if the instructor already has to give the information to the bookstore, why not give it to the consumer?
Is there anyone in the audience that has any opinions on this amendment? Seeing none, I believe we're ready to vote on the oral amendment. Everyone understand it? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Thank you,
the change
Chair,
is adopted. And the A-10 amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, just back to the A-10 amendment now to adopt it in full. I'll just go ahead and thank you, Representative Morrow, and thank you to your student as well. Just to say that I think this is a language that has really reached good conclusion. I think we have most people involved in agreement on what we support here. And I would point your attention to the kind of information that Representative Morrow and his intern just pointed out to you. There's a copy of a single page that I had added from one publisher for one textbook that I use. You can see that it lists the two new chapters and five new cases that are added. Well, one's new chapter, one revised chapter, and some new cases. And the question would be whether or not this would be something that we could... whether or not something that could get that information to students so that Representative Morrow's student could more easily figure out what's the right choice for me in terms of picking that textbook. And I think that's a good idea, and I thank you for the conversation and your support of this amendment.
Okay, ready to vote on the A-10 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The A-10 amendment is adopted. Representative Atkins, A-12. Amendment. Are you ready?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For folks that have been here for a little while, you know that there's been kind of a, let's just call it a feud at the TCF Stadium. When it was originally built, there were lots of tax dollars used. The U intended to serve alcohol only in the suites. House members in particular took some umbrage at that and adopted language and statute that provided that the university's liquor license would only kick in the event that beer was available to the general public as well. It was overwhelmingly supported by members of the House. I believe it was 120 some odd to a dozen or something like that. So it's a very strongly held position in the House. I believe it is in the Senate as well. A number of members sitting around the table supported it. With the help of people like Representative Rukavina, Representative Doubt, members on both sides of the aisle as well as the University of Minnesota, we have tried to come up with some language that is acceptable that would enable beer to be served in the suites. I'm told it's costing the university $1.5 million to $2 million a year by not being able to make that available to suite holders. And so this would allow that to occur, and the university then indicated an agreement to the language in the 812 amendment that would require some availability, I believe, in something in a beer garden format within the stadium on the east end, beer that would be available to the public. Is that... I just want to make sure that members have... I see people looking with some confused... the 812 amendment was delivered, Mr. Chairman, of the committee. Has everybody got it?
Yeah.
That's...
Okay.
The, so that's the...
other two are.
That's what I'm trying to reflect in my comments, is that there's agreement to it. We've put it into the liquor omnibus bill, Mr. Chairman. And as Representative Rukavina taught me years ago, sometimes you're better off putting it in a number of places. So we thought it might also be appropriate to have it in the higher education omnibus bill. Mr. Chair, with that, I would be happy to stand for any questions. There's also representatives here from the university in the event that you want to hear from them, and I believe Representative Dowd may have a comment or two as well. He was instrumental in pursuing this option as well.
Mr. Chair, for clarification...
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, for clarification, there were a couple of other amendments I sent to Mike and to the chair just to show what might happen the other day, and throw those away because there's been some language added that the university and Representative Atkins agreed upon yesterday, and I think Representative Dowd, so toss those away.
Representative Dowd, did you have something?
It said they had to name it the Iron Range Rukavina Beer Garden, but they didn't go along with that.
Negotiations on that fell through, so... Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I appreciate the efforts on both sides of the aisle for those who wanted to give the university some resolution on this issue. I am obviously new here and wasn't here for the disagreements of the past, but everybody's been very willing to try to work out a reasonable solution, and I think that this is exactly that. So I appreciate Representative Atkins bringing this forward. We did also amend this on another bill in Commerce yesterday. It's the same language that we have here, and I am very supportive of this, so thank you.
Representative Depp.
Thank you very much. May I ask Representative Atkins a question?
You may.
Yes. Representative Atkins, does this in any way take away the Regents' authority to make this decision? In the past, we've always allocated that decision to the Regents. Does this take away their authority to make that decision?
Atkins?
Thank you. I don't know. I'm afraid
no.
Representative Rukavina wants to answer it. Then I'll give you the real answer.
Representative Depp.
May I ask Representative Rukavina?
Representative Depp, the university has, if you're asking about the, you know, the separation of powers and the ability to tell regents what to do, the answer to that, and I think Ms. Novak will help me, is that the regents have a lot of power dealing with the university. They have no power and no authority to get a liquor license. The liquor license and an application for a liquor license and the rules dealing with their liquor licenses are just specifically legislative authority. And so anything we do, we have the authority to do, and they can't protest and come forward with their, you know, separation of powers and that. But this gives them some leeway on what to do with it. But if that was kind of your question about that, well, we can tell them what to do. On liquor, we can tell them what to do.
Thank you. And they've come to you and asked you for that authority?
That's what, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Atkins.
I only let Representative Rukavina step in because I thought he was going to be funny. but he gave a very correct answer. This gives the regents more latitude than they currently have, and that's what they're looking for.
Thank you very much.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for not jumping in earlier in the previous amendment to the bill and expressing my attitude about how I felt the board was perfectly capable of handling those situations. So on this one, to make sure that the author is clear where I stand on, I don't like the idea of serving beer. I'm not naive to the fact that college students drink beer, probably lots of it. And they don't on my campus, unfortunately, or fortunately, because we have a covenant that doesn't allow it. But I just don't like the idea of, you know, the kinds of activities that go on in campuses and providing alcohol to potentially 18, 19, 20-year-olds that they're not, we could talk IDs, couldn't we? But, you know, the fact is, I just wanted to let you know up front that I wouldn't be voting for the amendment.
We need to move on as fast as we can.
Just one quick follow-up.
Representative Dowd, did you have something?
Oh.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One thing I did not state is my original preference was that we just cut all of the restrictions out of the statutes and allow the Board of Regents to do this in the way that they best prescribe. And this was really the compromise position, and I appreciate everybody's efforts on it, and I do support it for that reason. But ultimately, I'd like to see the Regents make the best decision that they feel is best for the university.
All right, with that, I'd like to call a vote for the A-12 amendment. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
The amendment is adopted. We have, I believe, one person in the audience would like to have about 1 minute to speak to us before
Chairman,
we
recess.
Mr. Chairman,
I do have
recess.
one more
going to recess.
Oh.
We need to recess till after a session. And we need time for people also to review what we've done and comment. Yes, it's still at the desk. Yes. If you can be very brief, then
I can
first
be very
identify
brief,
yourself.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Leslie Mercer from the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and I just wanted to briefly speak to the A5 amendment that passed earlier, and I apologize for not getting down here fast enough to see that I wanted to say something. We'd like to have some continued conversation with you about the amendment, not because of the intent of the amendment, but we're not sure that it does exactly what you're intending, and we're concerned that this may shift the cost from students to our campuses to have to fund this if the Board of Teaching were to continue to do this. So we'd like to have some conversation with you as appropriate.
Mr. Chair. Okay, thank you. Representative
Mr. Chair,
Pulaski?
Mr. Mercer, though, if the Board of Teaching would back off, that would be a moot point, would it not?
That would be correct.
All right. Yes. Just so it's clear, Mr. Chair, that this is a decision that a department can make on backing off a mandate and then coming back to us with a reassessment of what they're mandating currently.
Okay, thank you. Members, we're going to take a recess until after the session. We'll be meeting in 300 South, 15 minutes after session is done.
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering.
We're in recess.
Are we done other than the Atkins Amendment?
Yes.
With the whole bill? Or is
well,
stuff?
We'll have some testimony perhaps at that time, too. We'll try and, for those who want to go home tonight, we'll try and keep it as brief as possible. And the same thing with floor session, if we can. We're in recess. Reconvene the Committee on Higher Education, Policy and Finance, and I have just one more amendment that I have in possession. Is anyone going to move it or would like to move it?
Oh, we could call this A4-1 amendment.
Correctly. That's correct.
I'll move the A4-1 amendment. And Mr. Chair, I have one oral amendment to it. On line 1.12, remove the word persons and insert the word students.
Representative Morrow, I think before we get to the amendment, this amendment did not reach or did not meet the 24-hour rule.
Mr. Chair,
so I hate to do that. I hate to even start off on what we call a sour note. But we all want to go home at the same time. There will be another opportunity as this thing goes forward to offer it, and then Representative Atkins would probably be here to defend it. But yes. That would be my moving forward. That would be my wishes, and we can get on to just dealing with the bill itself,
Mr. Chair,
and then vote on that. Representative,
Mr. Chair,
Rukavina.
If I could, I just want to say again. You know, there's been other leeway given to amendments that need to be offered to bills, and I'm not going to quibble about it. I wish you would have made a different ruling earlier, but just for the record, I want to, you know, complain again that even though it hadn't been a 24-hour... Mr. Chair, I guess what I'd like to say is I wish you would run this committee like I did, where the only rule was there were no rules, and that's the way we should do it. But you have your own style.
Representative Rukavina, I personally agree. I don't like rules either. But we have to follow them when we have them. That's the way.
And you, Mr. Chair, and we tried to help you follow the rules mm-hmm. earlier today.
And we can always change them at a later date.
And the rule, well, that's...
Representative Morrow? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's okay. I want to get home, too.
Mr. Chair, I'm not going to do more on that. I mean, I'm going to say, though, Mr. Chair, that as a member of the House of Representatives, I feel you've taken away yet another option to try to resolve amicably what happened earlier today. And I want you to know you're putting us in a position we have to take other measures to express our concern. And members, I think that's terribly unfortunate. I wish we could resolve what happened today in this committee. I'll accept your decision.
Okay. And I appreciate the comments. And for those of you who have been on this committee before, I think this was where we used to meet. Pulaski, wasn't this the room we were in for many?
When I was the chair, and I hate to use that phrase.
And we would pack the place. Now, looking around tonight, we've got...
Yeah, it was standing around.
We used to have a sell-out crowd, but anyway. So at this point, I'd like to have discussion on our House File 2065 as amended.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
There's no... We have no budget, do we?
That's correct.
So... Are we going to get some sort of fiscal impact now that this bill is put together before it hits Ways and Means? So that it's going to Ways and Means, I still assume, right?
So, yes.
And then we'll have a balance sheet by the time we get to Ways and Means to look at it.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pulaski, currently for all the items that are in the amended version of the House File 2065 DE1-1, there's no fiscal cost. So there's not a spreadsheet at this point. I can certainly provide you with a spreadsheet that has the same tails from the last budget cycle, but at this point, there's no fiscal cost.
No, Mr. Chair, that would be adequate. I appreciate that statement on a number of levels, as you will see as we move forward.
Any other comments from the members?
Mr. Chair.
I'll ask the public to make a comment. Representative Mazarol.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I was in another committee this afternoon. Sounds like there might have been a lot of discussion on amendments. And I had intended to propose an oral amendment to Section 2, which is the immunization bill that we heard on Tuesday. Is that...
out of order.
Let me finish the question anyway. Is that out of order?
We need to check. Can you go ahead and describe what that would be?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The proposed amendment, and this is after discussion with the Minnesota Department of Health, and they offered some language that they felt very comfortable with. The amendment would be on line 2.4, after the word persons, to add the words who are only. So that would read persons who are only enrolled. And then on line 2.5, add the words after evening, add the words or weekend. So the entire sentence would read, students do not include persons who are only enrolled in extension classes, comma, correspondence classes, comma, online classes, comma, or evening or weekend adult accelerated programs. And again, that was proposed by the Minnesota Department of Health. And we kept in there, as you can see, the amendment that was proposed and adopted, the amendment of Representative Norton from Tuesday.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, I would hope that now that we have the amendment and we know what it looks like, that we could wait to Ways and Means so we can understand it. This is two changes. I'm not really sure what they do. They may be just simple wordsmithing, but we could wait to Ways and Means to be sure.
I think that's a good suggestion. If the author doesn't mind, and if you need someone to present it,
Mr. Chair, if he wants someone, I'd even offer it. If it is just a simple word change, I don't have a problem offering it in Ways and Means either. But I would like to understand them before we put them on and pass them.
Okay, I will accept that, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
All right, thank you for the suggestion. Anyone in the audience want to comment tonight? That's good. Any other discussion among our members? Questions? I do not want to drag this out much longer, so.
Nor do we.
So at this point, willing to renew my motion that House File 2065, as amended, pass and be referred to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, before we vote, I just want to know, if I get a speeding ticket tonight, will you pay for it?
I don't have a budget for that.
Turns it into a fiscal bill. Yeah.
All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 No.
House File 2065, as amended, is on its way to Ways and Means. And we are adjourned. Thank you very much.